time for an interview with Big JD. For more Big JD, visit BigJD.com or visit YouTalkingToMe.ca. That's the letter U, talking, the number two, me, YouTalkingToMe.ca. Today I'm talking to TJ Rebert, who is somewhat of an expert on the 50s and 60s. He's got a lot of fond memories to share of those times. Now, you come to us from webmaster John Kelly, who does the, now is it pronounced Loti, L-O-T-I dot com?
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is a 50s and 60s resource, an excellent resource, I must add. TJ's big on the 50s and 60s. We're just kind of going to go through a list of different things, and I guess just tell us what comes to mind. Let's talk about a little bit about racism first, because there was a lot of different things going on through those eras.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was from a neighborhood where there were no blacks. The town I lived in had none, and the high school I went to, there was only 84 of us in the high school class, and we had one black guy, and his name was Snowball. So,
wow,
we didn't have a lot of racism problems. I mean, you heard about it all, and I really didn't get oriented to that till I went into the military in the early 60s, and then the racism sort of reared its ugly head, but. In me growing up, in the town I was where I was growing up, there wasn't any of it.
Mm-hmm. How about, you mentioned when you're in the service and that, and war, post World Wars, and then, you know, the things that went on in the 60s, and you were Navy.
Yeah. I went in the Navy in 62, uh-huh. And that was before Vietnam, went into Naval Air. And like I say, that's where I got my first dose of racism and first dose of real reality of life. And it was pretty good. When Vietnam started, I did my last tour over there. But when Vietnam started, the change of military, they sort of looked down on us a bit. But I never really had any problems with that either. The anti-war thing went through the 60s, and that got real big. I liked that kind of music, but I didn't like the idea because I was in the military at the time. I was Naval Air.
Right.
So.
And what did you get into the service, like, as soon as you could, or were you
in
the
military? I really didn't know what I wanted to do, and I got a couple little jams back then, and I figured, boy, if I don't do something, I'm going to be in real deep. So I walked into one recruiter's office, and he told me I'd be a man, I'd be a Marine, and I'd do all this. And I walked in the other, and they said, you can go to school, and you can work in what you like to do. And that was mechanical things for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back and told the first guy, I just joined the Navy. Went home, told Mom, and left the next day. It was one of them quick deals.
Wow, yeah. And, I mean, you would have been how old when you, were you 18 or something when you?
I was 18, yeah.
Okay.
I went in, I turned 18, and in June, I went in October, but I just had no direction. I was out of high school, didn't know what I wanted to do, and figured, geez, if I keep this up, I'm going to be off the end of the chart somewhere. You know, that was the start of the drug era and a lot of grass and a lot of this and that, and I just didn't want to get into that, so I went in the military.
And was there much of that in the military, actually? Or
no. Yeah. Back then, there was none of it in the military. That was more the hippie style people. They were the grass smokers. It was sort of its own little cult back then.
Right.
Then it grew to the rest of the world. But I knew that if I kept on the track I wasn't going to get anywhere because mm-hmm. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I come from a family that was my father was a doctor, and I had a couple brothers that were doctors, but I had no desire to do that. Didn't want to go to school, so I went off in the other direction. I was like the black sheep of the family there, I guess.
But, and
They still loved me, I guess.
And how long were you in for?
4 years and 4 months.
Okay.
They extended me. I got out right as the Vietnam was starting, and in late 66, I got out.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually got out of the military I was supposed to get out in October of 66, but it extended because of Vietnam.
Now, with the Vietnam War, I mean, were you active in any way of, you know, obviously you probably supported...
Well, yeah, I supported
degree,
it
you
because
know,
I didn't support the idea, but
right,
what I support
right.
is if there's troops somewhere, you got to support them. You
exactly.
might not like why they're there, just like today.
Yeah.
I don't like why we're over there, but when you have your people over there, you got to support them people. You can't be bad-mouthing them. And back then, there was a lot more support. The actors and the people were sort of supportive in the beginning.
Right.
And then it went away when the peace movement came in. That all went away. But it was an experience. When I got out of the military, you know, I was pretty proud of it. And then by that time, the peace movement was really in, mm-hmm. early 67. And you were looked down on like you were some kind of a... I flew mail and cargo on and off of aircraft carriers.
Okay.
I wasn't shooting children. I wasn't tearing up the countryside. I wasn't bombing people. But I was support on an aircraft carrier.
And, right.
Our job was to fly mail and cargo and parts and all that stuff. So back then, we were flying from Subic Bay out to the carriers and then Da Nang back to the carrier. And in Subic Bay, we just keep making that same run back and forth.
Now, you mentioned a little earlier about school, being in school. How was school through the 50s and 60s, and how did it maybe differ between the two? You'd have been a pretty young kid, I guess.
But back 50s. Then, you didn't give teachers a bunch of crap, and you dressed the way that you were supposed to dress, and if you stepped out of line, they whack you. I mean, they had their big old ruler. They whack you across the hands. I got whacked a lot of times, let me tell you. And I got sent to the principal's office and sat on that bench many a time also. But back then, you knew the discipline was going to come at home, because if they sent a note home that you were in trouble in school, man, old mom got the cat and nine tails out and put it on your butt, and that wasn't child abuse. That was just, you knew what you did wrong, and you were going to get a little punishment for it. Now they just assume tell an instructor to get bent and get away with it. You know, there was a lot more discipline back then. Let's put it that way.
And you lead right into something else I wanted to ask you about, was parents. You know, what comes to mind? I mean, you know, what parents might be like today. What you know of parenting today, as opposed to back then.
I think a lot of times the parents don't know what the kids are doing. I think it comes from the parents from then were brought up in a pretty liberal time.
Mm-hmm.
So they look at their kids and say, well, I'll let the kid do what it has to do, and they don't want to do the discipline. I don't know if they're afraid to discipline their kids or they just don't want to know what their kids are doing. But I taught in a vocational school for 12 years from 68 until 1980,
mm-hmm.
and the parents had no clue what their kids were doing. They'd come in for a parent night, if they would come in, and you tell the parents that, hey, you know, the kid can't play with drugs like this. If he's going to get high, he can't come to school. And the parent would look at you like you're crazy, because they didn't want to know their kids were doing it. And then you grab Johnny and say, well, Johnny, tell Mom, you don't need drugs? And the parents are standing there looking stupid. I think the parents got to open their eyes up. They can see what's going on. They just don't want to know it.
Yeah, I wonder if a lot of that could be attributed to the plethora of things there are to do these days, as opposed to back then, pastimes and that kind of thing. So
there was no such thing as a video game or a cell phone. You didn't do that. Yeah, I mean, you played Monopoly. You went out in the garage and worked on your cars. You played a couple of high school sports. They got a lot more sports than they had then. Our school had baseball, football, basketball. That was it. You know, but now there's all kinds of things for them to do, and I guess the kids. I attribute a couple things to the kids the way some of them are today, and they can be right. But I attribute to video games. By the time the child's 10 or 12 years old, they've killed 100,000 people on their video game. So now if they have a problem with somebody, they blow them away like they did on the video game.
Yeah.
And the other one, and I know it's a vicious circle, but there was no such thing as child care back then. I mean, the parents raised their children at home. Now everybody's got to work 2 and 3 jobs to make the end meet, and the parents don't. The child care people, whoever you're sending your child to for child care, they're raising the children. So you don't grow up in the way of your parents. You grow up in the way of the child care provider. So I'm not a big fan of video games, especially the violent ones.
Yeah.
I know they got a right and all that stuff. Maybe I don't believe in their right to be able to do that kind of stuff. So I'm not a video game fan, and I'm not a fan of, I think you ought to at least raise your children until they get to school.
Sure.
And get them formed in your way other than the other way. Back then, I mean, your parents raised you, period. You knew your parents were raising you. It wasn't, I wonder who's in charge here. It was your parents,
right?
Their mom or dad.
Let's talk a little more about entertainment. Radio, television, were some of the things that come to mind then. And
my first concert I went to,
Okay.
Was the airport drive-in theater, because they didn't have concerts like they have today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there you didn't have the big venues, but it was the old drive-in theater up near the Philadelphia airport, and Jerry Lee Lewis was the first guy I ever saw.
Okay.
And him and, what was the other guy's name? They called him Bill Haley and the Comets. They were
right.
They were together. And Bill Haley was right here from the town I grew up in.
Uh-huh.
So he was like the opening guy for Jerry Lee Lewis. And music back then was a lot different. You could understand every word of every song, regardless if it was a fast song or a slow song.
Right.
And the words sort of had a meaning. And, you know, during the 60s, the meaning a lot of times with Dylan and a lot of the singers back then, Bob Dylan was anti-war in that sentiment, but it had a story
political.
Behind it.
Mm-hmm.
You might not have agreed with the story behind the song, but you know you could understand it. I can't understand the music now. It's
yeah,
but
back
I'm
then.
An old guy.
I mean, it was the times back then. So you know,
yeah.
Guess what was going on is, and that's musicians tend to deal with a lot of that stuff, and now I guess you're right, it's changed quite a bit.
Back then you had Tommy Edwards and you had the Platters and you had there was songs that had real stories, and you had a girlfriend and them songs that I hear them today and you can still think about the girl you dated back then, you know.
Yeah, bring back those memories.
There's a million memories in them songs. I'm an oldies fan. I like the oldies, and I play them all the time. I do a lot of traveling, so put in an 8-pack of CDs and let them play for 12 hours, you know, with no problem.
Yeah. Were you in the dances at all back then?
Bandstand was here in Philadelphia. See, my town is right near Philadelphia, so we used to be able to take off one day every month and go to Bandstand. The school would allow you to do it. That was a thing.
Oh, wow, okay.
The beginning of Bandstand was Bob Horn, and then Dick Clark didn't come until a little later. Bob Horn got himself in a jam, and Dick Clark took over Bandstand, but yeah, we'd go up there. Justine Carelli was always there, and Roe, Bandstand. That's only that's 5 miles from my house,
mm-hmm.
So we'd go up and do that. And all the stars they make these appearances on Bandstand. All the singers of the day, so you got to see everybody. Frankie Avalon and all of the groups would come on. Dick Clark would have them on, and we'd go up there and just dance. I mean, there weren't as many dances as there are now. You had the jitterbug, and there was slow dancing, and the stroll, and the strand, and a few things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The Bristol stomp. they were good times, and the school allowed you to do that. You know, like I say, you were allowed to take one. I think it was a Tuesday that we were allowed to take off and take the bus up to Broad Street and go to Bandstand.
Sounds like a blast.
Nah, it was. It was different for sure now. And there was never a fight. There was never, ever a fight. Now, if they had that, there would be either a racial thing going on or
sure.
Something going on where you'd be a drive-by shooting or a stabbing or they'd blow the place up. But you never heard of that back then. Hey, once in a while you stepped on somebody's toes because you danced with the wrong girl and had a few words, but that was about the end of it, you know?
Yeah.
A few punches and it was done. Now knives and guns come out, so...
And I want to talk a little bit about restaurants and the drive-in restaurants and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, see.
Because that's some cool stuff.
I was always a car person.
Yeah.
So around here, there were four or five places to go. If you were in Chester, you went to Big Mo's, and that was a drive-in theater where the girls had the roller skates. And that's where you'd find your races. All the other guys with their hot cars and their hot rods would come in, and then you'd negotiate the races.
Mm-hmm.
And what was near that was Interstate 95. They were building the interstate. And there were two green signs that were a quarter mile apart. So we'd go from Big Mo's, we'd set up some races, and we'd go out onto the interstate where they were building it, and we'd race from green sign to green sign. And then the next town over was Springfield, and they had a place called Scotty's. And there was a little town down the road a ways called Ridley Park. They had a place called The Mug.
Mm-hmm.
And they had two there. They had The Mug and they had The Chubby Pig. And they were all drive-ins, and some of them had the girls on roller skates, and some of them just walked out. You'd pull in under the canopy, order your stuff, they'd hang a little tray on your window.
Right.
And you'd walk around and yell over to the next guy of who was running good, and set up the races, and then the whole place would just clear out. It would go from full to empty. Oh, there's going to be a race. We're going down to the bypass. So everybody would go out, and they'd line up along the road, just like the old movies had it. That was the real thing. And there was the cool guys, and then there was the nerds, and the nerds were always out to watch the races and hook up with the cool guys, you know.
Wow.
He had the fast cars. He had 49 Fords.
What were you driving?
Well, back then, I had a 49 Ford. It was a flathead.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the 56 Fords were good. The Oldsmobiles were fast. They were heavy, but the Rocket 88s were a pretty heavy thing. And the Chevys really didn't come in yet. See, Chevy didn't make a V8 until 55.
Uh-huh.
Then when that Chevy engine came out, oh, then everybody had to redo our stuff. But I had a 49 Ford, and then I put a Buick engine in it. I was Buick powered, and made them look original from the outside, but you had a lot of power under the hood, and I always did pretty well with that. That's how I got started in drag racing, street racing.
And do you do that now? Any racing or?
Oh yeah. The car is called Poverty Stricken, and all the Poverty Stricken car. We started racing seriously in 1969,
okay.
We ran what they call Alderds, and we ran Bantam bodies and 23T bodies, and we went to funny cars, alcohol funny cars,
yep.
And right now we run a nostalgia funny car, a nostalgia fuel funny car called Poverty Stricken, and we run an A-fuel dragster. But back then, if you spent in the 60s, if you spent $1,000 a year, you had a pretty competitive car. And then when we got serious and stopped the street racing and went to drag racing, I mean, if we spent $5,000 a year, you were somebody then. Now, if you spend $100,000 a year, you're not doing anything. You're wasting your time.
Now, especially with racing and stuff, how did you find the relationships with gas prices then, as you know they are now? Obviously.
I laugh. We were talking about this the other day. There was a little gas station called Mako's Esso. That went to Exxon. And they used to have what they called gas wars back then. The one station would drop a penny, and the other station would drop a penny, and they'd go back and forth on the corners. And I can remember gas at 17 cents a gallon. Now, you know that?
Wow.
You say they can't sell gas for 70. Yeah, it was. It was normal. Here was a normal thing. When you went to get gas, here's what you said to the gas guy, because you didn't pump your own. You pulled up with a bunch of guys in your car, and you say, "Give me a dollar's worth."
Yep.
That's how you ordered your gas. Give me a dollar's worth.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid would pump a dollar's worth in, which would be, you know, under normal conditions, would be about 4 gallons. And that would let you cruise the whole night. You'd have a back seat full of guys and a couple of girls, and you'd go to all the different hangouts. You'd go to the Big Mo, and you'd go to the Chubby Pig, and you'd down in Upper Darby, there was a place called the Hot Shops. And you'd hit to all them places, and you did that on a dollar's worth. That was the normal. You never filled it up. Give me a dollar's worth.
Yeah.
Everybody, who's got some money? I got 30 cents. I got 70 cents. I got 25 cents. So you throw it all in, get a dollar's worth, and off you go. But 17 is the cheapest I ever remember it. And when it went to a dollar, oh, my God, that was much, much later than the 50s and 60s when it went to a dollar.
Yeah, yeah.
So 50 cents a gallon, it stayed for a long, long time.
Before we move on, do you have a website or anything for what you do, racing-wise or anything like that?
Yeah, it's under development. I do a lot on eBay, 9-inch Fords, and my website is 8-and-9-inch Fords, 8-and-9-inch Ford Rears.com.
The number 8 and 9?
The number 8, the word, and 9-inch Ford Rears.com. But it's only I only have the opening page. In fact, John Kelly is developing a website for me, but he got busy and I got busy. So I wanted it to be an informational website, not a sales website. I got enough sales.
Right, yeah.
I'm over 330 of these units so far this year.
You going to have some of your racing stuff up there? I mean, your you know, any old pictures or anything like
No nostalgia pictures, none of that.
Yeah.
I have a bunch of nostalgia pictures, and
yeah.
And I never owned a camera. Other people give me the pictures. I was never a camera person. But I got a bunch of them in my mind, that's for sure. I got a lot of collages of pictures that people put together for me.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a lot of fond memories. How about the clothing back then?
If you go back into the 50s,
yeah.
the 50s were pretty. First, when I was young, my mother made all my clothes.
Wow.
But then that wasn't cool, you know. You had to keep up with the rest of the people.
Right,
back then it was pegged pants. It wasn't bell bottoms. Bell bottoms wasn't until the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But pegged pants was, you'd get the ankle of your pants cut down to about 13 inches, and you could hardly get your damn foot through it. Sometimes you even put zippers on the side of your ankles. It was pegged pants, and it was wide lapel jackets, and later was Nehru jackets. It was a different deal. You had shoes that were called flag flyers. They had a flipper in the front instead of having to lace it.
Right.
They weren't a docker, the docksider type shoe. You put your foot in and you'd flip this flap up over the tongue, and it had two little runners that would come up and tighten your shoe.
Wow.
They were flag flyers. It was a little different. Penny loafers were the thing back then. The girls would wear their white and black shoes. Dresses were, that was before the miniskirt thing. The dresses were big fluffy dresses. When you went to a prom back then, she filled the whole front seat of the car with a dress. That was before the mini dress era, you know. It was all cover everything up, you know, and you had about 49 petticoats underneath the thing. You had to really hustle to find out what was under there, you know. By the time you got there, you couldn't find your way back out.
How about hair? I'm not talking about the dresses now. I'm talking about
hair. No, not that. Hair was ducktails. I mean, you wore your hair. You sort of greased your hair up a bit.
We're talking about the 50s here, right?
The 50s, and you sort of had your hair greased up a bit, and you used Vitalis or Brill Cream was the stuff.
Yeah.
And you covered it back like a duck's butt, and that was called a ducktail. And the front of the hair sort of had a high pompadour in the front of it. I look at them pictures back then, and you sort of laugh. I wasn't much into the hairstyle because I was always in the garage. Well, I always had a garage next to my house, so
yeah.
The long hair was always dirty for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the real style was you wore your hair in a ducktail, combed it back on both sides to like a crack in the back, and flipped the front of it up, the pompadour up.
And what about you see some of the guys wore like a little curl kind of in the front on the forehead. You know what I mean?
Well,
like
that came from Bill Haley in the comments.
Okay.
They say, you'll have people say he was the start of rock and roll.
Yeah.
And he was a pretty tall guy, and he had this curl that hung down in the front, and that's where that curl all came from was Bill Haley.
Okay.
And he had a little band. One guy had a bass, and they had a drummer, and they had whatever, and he was the singer, and that's where that thing came from, Bill Haley. And then everybody wanted to, you know, just like when the Beatles came in the 60s, long hair wasn't long hair like that.
Mm-hmm.
They come out with that hair down past their ears, and everybody looked at that when it first come out, and they got on to Ed Sullivan's show, and what the hell's that kind of hair? What are they? And then all the older people, oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Well, then that trend caught on. But before the long hair of the 60s, it was the ducktails in the 50s.
Mm-hmm. And what about when you got out of the Navy, did you have long hair after that, or did you keep your hair like...
No, I kept my hair short. See, I always worked in automotive shops. It was automotive all the time for me, so I was sort of out of trend with the hair.
Yeah.
Everybody had their longer hair and their ducktails and grew it longer. That wasn't me because I had, you know, I was working underneath cars all the time and I was dirty. So you, by need for me, I kept my hair short.
Yeah. Do you have, is one of the eras your favorite, the 50s or 60s?
Probably the late 50s.
Yeah.
The high school days was 58 to 62.
Mm-hmm.
So you really enjoyed them high school days. You had some girls that you met, and they taught you what life was about, and or you taught them, or we taught each other, or we found out what it was all about.
Yeah.
So that was really good times. You can remember the girls you dated, and when you run into them now, you look at them, and you go, yo, what the hell was that all about? You know? In fact, there was one. I dated a girl one time. I was in the Navy. So the 60s were pretty good, too, but I was in the Navy and out with a couple buddies of mine, and many, many years later, I had this guy walk up to me, and he says, I'm your son. He called me, actually.
Oh.
He said, I believe I'm your son. I said, what the hell are you talking about? We've got to talk. And when I met him, it was like looking in a mirror. He is a son of mine. You know, I'm in contact with him all the time now, but he was 27 years old and wanting to know his background. But back then, like I say, it was sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and I missed the drugs. So, you know, here's a son pops up when he's 27 years old, and he's a good kid now. He's not a kid anymore. He's 43 years old.
Okay, yeah.
Well, we keep in contact with each other all the time. I had to go hunt his mother down. He knew his mother. His mother put him up for adoption when he was right after he was born. was in contact with his mother for many years.
Uh-huh.
And then he wanted to the reason he was really hunting for me, he wanted to know if there was any mental problems in the family.
Oh, yeah,
there's plenty of them. But
were you in contact with his mother afterwards, like once he contacted you again or no?
Yeah, after he contacted me. I only knew her one day. I mean, we were at the York Fair in York, Pennsylvania. We were home on leave and went to the York Fair, and that's how it was back then.
Those Navy guys.
Oh, yeah, you know,
the sailors.
Well, back then, you didn't have any worries like today, you know?
Yeah,
the most you'd get is, you know, crabs or something like that, you know? But now, man, you got to be careful. Back then, it was, hey, man.
Yeah, you really can't do that now.
Sex is a normal thing. If it moved, you jumped on it, you know? And it was, you know, we all agreed that was a good thing to do. But now, you got to be careful, you know? That's part of the game, you know. They found some new diseases.
The times certainly have changed.
Oh, haven't they ever? You know?
Well, we can't top that story about you finding out about the son that you didn't know you had. So
yeah, I had no clue. I mean, she never told me. And then I went and asked her. I said, "Why didn't you tell me?" Well, you know, I didn't think you wanted to know. But that was the thing back then. I mean, when I went to the Woodstock reunion in 92.
Mm-hmm.
It was all kind of stories. It was mostly the storytelling of the old. I didn't go to the original Woodstock,
right?
Because that was sort of more the anti-war theme, and mm-hmm. I wasn't into that. And I was just out of the Navy, and you know, I guess I was falling in love and getting married and getting unmarried too.
Yeah.
But I went up to the one in '92, back up to Socrates, New York, is where it is, right on the interstate there.
Right. Yep.
And boy, there was a lot of stories up there. Let me tell you, that was a lot of fun. The music was a little different, but you know, there was still some good stuff. But back in our days, they didn't have when I walked in, Nine Inch Nails was playing in '92.
Oh yeah,
they wouldn't have had no Nine Inch Nails or Red Hot Chili Pepper back then. You know, it was a different time for sure.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us here on the Jabbercast, TJ. It's been a lot of fun, and I really appreciate you sharing all your memories.
Oh, I got plenty of them. I appreciate you giving me a call. Maybe I can give a few laughs to somebody out there.
All right, great. Thanks.
Take care.
You just listened to another interview with Big JD. For more Big JD, visit BigJD.com or visit YouTalkingToMe.ca. That's the letter U, talking, the number 2, me, YouTalkingToMe.ca.